other yak babies. Sex, presidents, and sometimes books.
Welcome to Yak Babies, a new podcast on the internet sponsored by Honey Sludge, the sweet sludge. My name's Aaron. I'm here with my personal pals, Dave.
Good morning, boys.
We have Brick.
Good morning.
And we have, calling from Old Ireland, Old Irish Nico.
Good afternoon.
Okay, time difference established. Now we know. This week's topic is started from an episode we had a while back about taste and sort of how your taste has evolved and sort of what you think it is. And I wanted to sort of reflect a bit more on that and think about where taste comes from in the first place. You know, how do you know what you like? What was sort of the sort of first moment when you felt confident or when you sort of felt your taste being shaped kind of in your head? And that sort of led me to think about influences and the people or things who shape that taste when we're younger readers. So I want to go around and hear from my personal pals here who or what the biggest influences in their early reading sort of taste and development were. Like who or what was essential or pivotal in sort of shaping the things that you care about or are fond of. You know, I'm thinking of, we talk a lot about the sort of literary fiction and genre fiction divide here. Was there ever a time when you felt like someone was, you know, influencing that decision for you? Does it all come, you know, just from your own reading experiences and that kind of thing? I just want to hear what these are. So Dave, we'll start with you. Who or what would you say are your biggest influences when it comes to your taste?
Well, you know, it's interesting you say the literary versus genre thing, because I feel like as a kid, I read a lot more genre work. And I think maybe we've talked about this in the past, but once we got into MFA together, it was like genre suddenly became a no-no, right? We weren't really allowed to read it or write it in any sort of capacity related to that program.
Yeah. And that seems like that was a early into, I guess like a, just a 2000s thing, I think, was, you know, genre is in the, like a genre is a lower, you know, form of writing or whatever. It was only really, I think, late 2000s and 2010s that genre sort of was reclaimed. And now seems like much more dominant than literary fiction is, for sure.
Do you think that's the case in programs too? Or
I bet. I mean, I don't have any data to support that except for my own experience teaching creative writing classes at a university level. Like the students want to write genre fiction. They want to write young adult and fantasy. They don't want to write literary fiction. And so it's weird for me to teach them sometimes. I'm like, oh, we're reading Dybbuk or whatever, or Kawabata. And they're like, yeah, I want to write about a fucking lizard who's also a mage. And I was like, oh, okay, I don't think Kawabata did that, but that's fine.
I would read the shit out of a Kawabata story. Lizard mages.
The lantern and the grasshopper who was also a wizard.
Yeah.
Sorry, Dave, back to you.
Yeah, so... I think as a teenager, one of the reasons I got into genre, and I've talked about this before, and excuse me, Aaron, it always tickles you. I had a sister who was really into Jimmy Buffett and his, so I got into him too.
I was also really into Jimmy Buffett, Dave.
Yeah, so yeah, I think you mentioned that. So I read his novel when I was a teen, and that led me to Carl Hiaasen, another of your favorites, Aaron. Who you read recently, right?
No, I don't think
so. Oh, that was
me.
And that's why we talked about it. That's right.
Having a total out-of-body experience.
Yeah. And it wasn't good. I've definitely moved past that. But yeah, and that, like, Michael Crichton, Clive Cussler, those kind of, Dean Koontz for sure.
Yeah, like sort of like celebrity authors, not in terms of they were celebrities before they became authors, but like sort of big name, high profile literary figures.
Right.
So your sister was a fan of those writers as well, or just you sort of just found them around?
No, she was a fan of Buffett's music. Okay. So I became a fan of his music and then his writing. And then, like, so I would read interviews to, like, find out what he was reading.
Holy
and
shit.
It branched out from there.
Jimmy Buffett is one of your biggest reading influences.
And now it's like, now I think we talked about this, Brick. Like, I can't listen to that music anymore either. And I can't read these books. I mean, it's just not who I am anymore.
Yeah, what was it like going back to Carl Hiaasen recently?
Bad. Yeah. I mean, it was hard
he just
to finish.
Retired from
forgettable, apparently.
Right, yeah, projectable. He just retired, right? As a journalist or as a
columnist. He did just retire.
He's still writing novels, but yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. That's so like a good, I mean, it's a very specific path for sure. I don't think a lot of people would say Jimmy Buffett is the origin of their interest in reading. I mean, you have to go to a concert now and talk to him and tell the story. He'll write a song about it.
You know, I mean, it's not like I wasn't reading before that. I've talked before about Hardy Boys and stuff like that growing up, but definitely as a teenager, when I started reading books for adults, that's kind of where it started.
It seems like that's an important moment when you sort of feel like you are making your own choices with literature, right? I don't know about the Hardy Boys. I guess I imagine that to some extent it was just around, and like you just kind of started reading from there. Whereas there's that first moment where you start to seek out the books that you want to read that aren't for class and aren't just like they were on the shelf, so just pick them up. Like that's a pivotal development. Nico, what about you?
So in thinking about this for the past almost 9 minutes now, I had tried to buy, it's a bit of a weird start, but bear with me. I tried to buy from my dad for Christmas one of those paintings of, you know, him as like a king with his face instead of the king. Have you seen those?
No, what?
Yeah, anyway, turned out to be a scam. The place I went to. And so 3 months later, I was like, I finally got the like credit card chargeback refund. And I was like, I never got him a Christmas present. What the hell am I going to get him? So I wound up getting him Masterclass.
James Patterson's?
No, it's just like a yearly subscription. Yeah. But you get two of them. So then I was like, all right, well then I'll hop on and see what I can find out.
James Patterson. So
and Dan Brown.
Yeah, Dan Brown's in there. I've listened to bits of three authors so far.
Wait, you're using his login and password, or you got like a 2-for-1 deal?
You got like a 2-for-1.
Shit, because I got that for someone and did not get a 2-for-1. Anyway, that's not relevant.
Yeah, I mean, you could use mine, I guess.
You want it? I wasn't hinting,
Jimmy
Buffett's but yeah.
Masterclass over and over again. You're like, wow, Dave really loves
it. 700 hours of Jimmy Buffett.
And I think it's really interesting how these different writers go about their process and how, so the three I listened to were Aaron Sorkin, Salman Rushdie, and David Baldacci. David Baldacci, I've not read many of his books, but apparently he writes like thrillers. And I thought maybe he would have something to say about how to write thrillers. I made it halfway through the first one. I was like, this guy's a fucking idiot. And I don't know how he's published a single book. Because he was saying shit like, so one thing you can do is like introduce several details. And one of them is irrelevant. And that's called a red herring. And here's how I used a red herring. And I was like, sweet Jesus Christ. This is how you write your books? It's like, oh, sometimes I use the like yeah irrelevant details to trick the reader. It's like, all right, that's great. And then Salman Rushdie is just too much of a genius. It's just like, he's like, you know, so-and-so was, I was talking to fucking Joseph Conrad, and he was like, sometimes I, you know, I just come up with the first sentence and then the rest of the novel unravels from there. It's like, well, that doesn't help me because I'm not a fucking genius. Like, I can't, yeah. Like,
and just, you don't know Joseph Conrad.
Yeah, I can't have one idea and then like that just spills out into, you know, a Booker winning novel. Right. But Aaron Sorkin was like right up my alley. He was like,
here's your Masterclass Goldilocks.
Yeah, he was like very craft focused. He was like, here's how you create drama. You have characters who want something and something's in their way. That's it. And you don't need to know what they were like when they were 5 years old, because they weren't 5 years old. They're just characters, and their characters should come out. And like, he was like a bunch of shit like that. And he was like, some people say there aren't any rules about writing, but there are. Aristotle came up with them all. You can read them in Poetics. And I was like, all right, I like this. Okay. It's the Salman Rushdie kind of approach where it's like, I just do whatever, you know, and it works out. Only works if you're Salman Rushdie.
Right.
For most people, that doesn't work. But I feel like the Aaron Sorkin method is like a more nuts and bolts way to think about writing, I think. So anyway.
Because it opens it up to anyone, right? It's like the Rushdie right. thing makes it exclusive.
And there's like...
to geniuses.
Yeah. And there's like tests that you can do. It's like, is this dramatic enough? Is the intention of the character clear enough? You know, like you can do that kind of stuff. So I think as far as writing, I think that's interesting. And I think it's interesting to kind of think about Sorkin's writing and how, you know, perhaps one of his flaws is that his characters are always hyper-focused on what they want. You know, when it's the West Wing, that makes sense. And it's the president who's trying to avert a war. Like, that makes sense. When it's 60 on the Sunset Strip and they're like panicking because they accidentally plagiarized a joke, it doesn't really make sense.
Right. Or being mad that someone doesn't know about Abbott and Costello, whatever, like some sort of weird lecture right. about the history of comedy. Like, okay.
Right.
So do you feel like Sorkin, were you a fan of Sorkin's writing before that? Do you feel like you were like influenced by Sorkin as a writer even before the Masterclass, or is it kind of like a new thing, a new revelation?
Yeah, I like, I can't really get behind the biopics. Like I'm just not a biopic fan, so I can't do Steve Jobs really. I'm not going to watch The Social Network. But the other stuff, like, I mean, A Few Good Men, The American President, West Wing, Sports Night.
Sports Night was a great show.
Yeah. Like, that's good shit. He's really good at that kind of mid-level drama. I mean, I guess it is more kind of high key, but it's like, people aren't shooting each other. They're mostly just talking.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's still very dramatic.
Like emotional tension as opposed to like ER, where the show is like, oh, someone's dying right. In the surgeon, whatever.
Or, you know, Grey's Anatomy, to use a reference from this century. Yeah, without being soap opera, without being melodramatic,
right.
He's dramatic, which I think is difficult. And like not a lot of people do that consistently. So anyway, that's mine, I guess.
Remember you also talking about David Mamet when we were in MFA school. Do you feel like David Mamet is an influence on you, or is that one of our temporary thing?
I think he has a very recognizable style. I don't know that I like can think of stories of his that I remember, like storylines. I can think of scenes, I guess. And
right.
That kind of Mamet way of writing dialogue.
Rhythm. Yeah.
Didn't he do that Val Kilmer movie about the...
Spartan.
Yeah, that was a good movie.
Mm-hmm.
President's daughter being kidnapped or whatever.
Yeah. Brick, what about you?
Great. I made a giant list.
Great.
Even as a kid, like books and TV and games and then like shit my friends and I talked about all always smushed together.
Right.
And I feel like that still kind of carries influences into my adulthood. I was really into, you guys know Calvin and Hobbes and the Redwall books. I also really like the Boxcar Children. Do you remember?
Sure. Yeah, totally.
As well as the Hardy Boys. You know, this the kind of like character-focused mystery stuff that bleeds into other things. Even the Redwall books had those a lot. There was usually some kind of mystery to unsolve, which kind of unlocked whatever the heroic action that needed to happen in the second half of the book was. Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark was like, we did a whole episode on it. That shit was just really kind of pivotal. As well as the Nickelodeon show, Are You Afraid of the Dark?
Sure,
you guys
sure.
Remember that? That kind of led me to the Twilight Zone and things like that. The thing that probably got me reading I always read a lot as a kid, but was this is pretty nerdy. Was Nintendo Power the magazine?
Interesting.
I pored over those. I like to the point where they were like falling apart. I used to read them.
Yeah.
Constantly when I was like 6, 7, you know, like. Pretty young, and that got me really like wanting to read more, you know, and that kind of led me towards books. Other magazines for kids are mostly pictures,
right.
And those were pretty word heavy. It also led me to video games that had more text than like maybe Mario Brothers, like the Squaresoft RPGs and stuff. Lots of reading. I think a lot of my vocabulary ended up coming from that, which is pretty nerdy. And then the first book I can think of, and we might have already talked on this, so I don't need to go for it. You already know what I'm going to say, probably. The first book I can think of that started making me think about books as maybe an adult and not a child was Ender's Game.
Oh yeah, sure.
It's the first book I kind of like. I read that book a lot and I loved it. The characters were kind of complicated and they had different motivations, and it's the first book I can remember piecing together that like there's more going on here than just the plot.
Right
Like it's like there's, you know, this is really about systemic abuse of children and genocide, right? And the characters' motivations being muddied because they're tricked into doing one thing and they're trying to do right, but actually they're doing wrong. And then in the end it's actually pretty unclear whether it was right or wrong, and that ambiguity was, you know, when I was 11 or 12, whenever I first read that, that was the first time it really kind of got me thinking about the complexity of books as opposed to just like the story and the characters.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's kind of the big one. And then the biggest influence then from there into like adulthood was Kurt Vonnegut. I went to the library and I read every Vonnegut I could find. I read him over and over again. And that kind of changed my taste for that wry, kind of like smart but cynical writing. It's really still to this day, like the approach I like the most. And then as an adult or a college kid, Irish writers especially carried that forward into that zany kind of quasi-reality that's sort of based in where we are, but also like kind of out there. And you got to really, The Third Policeman was a book that I loved very much. Flann O'Brien, obviously Ulysses, and another one that's not Irish, but I think Aaron, you probably might even have this one on your list, is Cosmic Comics.
Oh, yeah, sure.
By Italo Calvino. That book really kind of changed how I looked at writing a little bit when I was, you know, an older teen in early 20s.
It's actually old Irish, not just Irish. You have to say old. That's the preferred nomenclature.
Uh-huh.
were these all self-directed reading experiences, Brick? Was someone kind of giving you Redwall early on? Were there people who were sort of like shaping this in some ways?
Redwall was a book. I didn't even find it with the main series. I found the Redwall books and I still have my copy because I found one of the side stories. Salamandastron was at a Scholastic book fair and I thought the cover was cool because it's a badger with a suit of armor, and I was like, that's badass. So I bought it and it was great. And then I read, you know, there's, I don't know how many books are in that series, but I had all of them up until when I outgrew them, and I read them all 5-6 right. times each.
That's so Scholastic book fair
is probably an episode in itself that we should
totally, and it's definitely on my list of influences for sure. That's like one of the big and early ones was the Scholastic book fair, being given a chance to walk around and look at books as a kid and figure out what you wanted to read. And I almost always just pick either like Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark or versions of that. Like there were a couple knockoff approaches they also loved.
There was also the newsletter that, or like the, not the newsletter, but the,
yeah, the catalog. Yeah.
The little pimp, the catalog. Pamphlet,
yeah, the thing that came like 2 weeks before it or whatever.
And it had a little list in the back. You could write down the titles you wanted to get and make your shopping list. Like just trained to be a consumer, but I fucking love that.
That's not still a thing, is it?
I also got
yep.
For real? Oh wow.
I believe it is, yeah. I mean, I'm sure it's all done digitally to some extent.
Last time I was in public schools, we had one, and they came.
The actual like newsprint style letter, man, that was the best. Most exciting. I also bought the Rocketeer Junior novelization at a Scholastic Book Fair. So it was lots of that kind of stuff. But also really important in my development was my older brother, because he was into comics. That's where I got into comics, through him. I mean, we watched the 60s Batman TV show after school and stuff like that. So I was already into Batman and Superman, stuff like that. But there's also this idea of like, oh, there's comics that they're in too. That's interesting. I should go read those. And then he had this big box of comics for a long time that I would sort of pick through. And then we started buying comics together and going to used bookstores and comic stores, that kind of thing. And then another important influence for me, which is a weird one, or kind of a weird one, but also I think explains a lot of some of our recent episodes of this podcast, maybe, is best of lists. I was really obsessed with, I remember in high school, turn of the millennium, there was the Modern Libraries list came out, the 100 best novels of the 20th century in the West. And I remember seeing the paper and reading it in like the Sunday section, like the opinion or the arts and entertainment section of the paper, and being like, holy shit, this is, I should be like reading these books. I should be focusing on this stuff. And that kind of idea of canon or like ranking lists always has been something that I'm interested in. And I recognize that it's stupid and it's not really a good way to measure art at all, but I am obsessed with it. And so like that kind of in the background has always been a voice of like, oh, you should read these books probably. And I kind of, if I'm looking for something to read and I'm not sure, there's nothing sort of inspiring me or I haven't heard anything or anything for the podcast, I probably will go back to that list at some point, like find a new book and go figure it out. That's why I read Point Counterpoint by Aldous Huxley, because it was just on that list. And you know, so yeah, the canon, unfortunately or fortunately, is like a major influence on me. I think it's limiting in a lot of ways. We just had an episode come out about worst books. And at some point I mentioned in my segment that you are all more adventurous readers than I am, because I tend to just read things that are supposed to be good and go from there. And like you all take chances and have different, like more evolved tastes. So like you kind of am frustrated by me.
What about that?
I think it is. I mean, just like a different form of reading where I'm like, well, I got to read these like 100 best books and I'll have read the 100 best books. And it's like not, it feels less personal and more like a homework assignment.
I don't know if exclusively fantasy audiobooks is more evolved.
More personal, let's say, more individual. So I kind of want to break out of it, or try to limit that to some extent. And also there's the, you know, besides the other very good reasons to do that because of the misogyny and racism of those kinds of lists or whatever. But yeah, it's still, that's why I get so worked up in those stupid Twitter threads when people are like, I didn't like Jane Eyre. And I'm like, fuck you. Jane Eyre's on these lists. Like, how dare you? And also I love Jane Eyre. So yeah, so it's mine. Book fairs, older brother, and canon. Listeners, you tell us about your influences on your reading taste. Who or what shaped it? Who was giving you books to read, sort of was pivotal in your life? Who or what, you know, if you, maybe you like Scholastic Book Fairs as well, and those newsletters or catalogs thrilled you as much as they thrilled the four of us, let us know on Twitter at GackBabies. And of course, you can email us at GackBabiesPodcast@gmail.com to share all your thoughts and insights. You can also find us on Patreon, patreon.com/GackBabies. For $1 a month, you can access our secret bonus podcast where all the stuff goes that we can't broadcast for free because it's too offensive and weird. So there's games there. There's personal stories that we have to censor to some extent. There's drafts. There's Broto Bros. There's all, so much stuff going on there. And also our merch is available. Until then, Yak Babies, yakking on.
The Yak Babies would like to thank all the loyal listeners and especially their patrons, both past and present, including Michael, Bonnie, Sebastian, David, Roger, Kathleen, Bailey, Andrew, and William Howard Taft.